Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and today we're going to be speaking with a woman who experienced what I would describe as probably one of the most severe personal injury cases I've encountered. She went through an extended recovery, and her story is one that gives you, as a legal nurse consultant, a perspective about what it's like from the patient's point of view to go through a catastrophic injury. Amberlee is the author of a book called True Grit and Grace, Turning Tragedy into Triumph. She's a former professional dancer, a fitness trainer. She's become a motivational speaker since her injury, and she shares a passion for inspiring other people. She offers workshops, public events, and she teaches in schools. Amberlee Lago has been featured in magazines such as Shape, Fit Pregnancy, Health, Disability Magazine, and AARP. And she is married and lives in Southern California with her two daughters. Amberlee, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could spend some time talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. It's really an honor to be here on your show. I appreciate you having me.
I would love to take you back, for the sake of our listeners, to that day when your life changed in the blink of an eye. Can you tell our listeners what happened?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy how fast your life can change. I was pretty much living the California dream. I had my dream job. You know, I was so blessed that I had, I didn't feel like a job. I was passionate about my, you know, personal training. Fitness was my passion. I was so active. I had the man of my dreams, two healthy kids, and I was on my way home from work when on my Harley, and I got T-boned by an SUV. I was thrown about 30 feet, and I was sliding down Ventura Boulevard, and when I came to a stop, I immediately felt pain, and I looked down at my leg, and it was just like something out of a horror scene. It was crumbled into pieces. And good thing I didn't know at the time that it was my femoral artery that had been severed, but there was just blood squirting out with like every pulse. There was just blood coming out, squirting out. And I didn't want to let go of my leg for fear of it. In my mind, I thought it might fall off. And it's crazy. The first thing that came to mind was, oh no, I may have to train clients on crutches for a while. Little did I know that it would take 34 surgeries, 3.5 months in the hospital the first time, and I was going to be put in induced coma. And I was lucky to have my leg because I had a 1% chance of saving it. When I woke up from a coma, the first thing I learned was they were going to amputate my leg. So being a former professional dancer and an athlete, you know, I worked for Nike. I was a run leader. I trained boxers and fitness competitors. My legs were my livelihood. So that was probably one of the worst things that I could have learned. And I tell you, it took an act of God and all the strength and support of my friends and family and some incredible doctors and nurses that I was able to pull through, and I was able to save my leg. But that was actually the easy part. And I know it sounds horrible and sounds like, how could that be the easy part? But after saving my leg, having those 34 surgeries, the hard part was when I found I made it through, they saved my leg, and they diagnosed me with complex regional pain syndrome, which is dubbed the suicide disease because it's ranked highest on the pain scale. And so I thought, well, I've made it. I've made it through, and only to be told I would live the rest of my life in a wheelchair. And I had to really come up with all kinds of tools and strategies to pull out of the darkness that I was in because I hit rock bottom. And, you know, just learning how to live in chronic pain has been, I've really had to develop some tools and strategies to strengthen my resilience. And so that's why I want to share my story, is because I just found out there are, I think there's, oh, I forget the number, something like 2 out of 5 people that live in chronic pain, whether it's back pain, but we all go through pain, whether it's emotional pain or physical pain. And so it's my hope to inspire others to no matter what their circumstances are, that they can find a way to live a life of joy despite their circumstances.
I appreciate that description of what you went through. And you were kind when we met each other at a conference earlier this year to give me a copy of your book. From our listeners' perspective as legal nurse consultants, one of the things that I found most striking, knowing that our listeners will understand this, is that there was a doctor who wanted to amputate your leg right away, and mm-hmm. your husband intervened. Tell our listeners what happened, how you ended up avoiding that surgery.
Well, yeah, my husband, when I was in a coma, they said they wanted to amputate. My husband said, no, I want her to wake up with both of her legs. I want her to make that decision on whether they're going to amputate or not. And it really took, my husband is a lieutenant commander with a highway patrol, and he has a lot of connections. And I'm telling you, it took every connection that he had, a lot of praying. And we had a family friend who was a doctor, and he called him and he said, what do I do? I don't know what to do. When I woke up out of a coma and I learned that, I said, no way. I want to keep my leg. And so I was transferred to another hospital. When I was in a coma, my husband, he had Googled limb salvage, and he found a doctor that was a trauma specialist, Dr. Don Wiss. And even though I had a 1% chance of saving my leg, Dr. Wiss, he was willing to try and at least save it. And so when I was in the hospital at Cedars, I knew Dr. Wiss, I was told, was away at a conference, and they said, well, he won't be in until Monday. He's away at a conference. And I was in the hospital on a Sunday night alone, and this guy comes in and he's got on a blazer, and he didn't look like a doctor, but he had a name tag on. And I looked at his name tag, and it said Dr. Don Wiss. And I said, oh, you're the man who's going to save my leg. And I just reached out for his hand and grabbed it. And I didn't want to let go. I thought, oh my gosh, he's the man who's going to at least try. And he said, well, we're going to see what we can do. First thing we're going to do is go in tomorrow morning, and we're just going to kind of clean up everything. Cause I had a fixator on my leg, and I had all these metal bars that were basically holding my leg together. My femoral artery had been repaired, and they were checking every day. And I guess there's a matter of time, because you only have so much time to where, you know, the tissue on my leg was already dying. So there's only a matter of time before the bone starts to die if you don't do something to try to put it back together. And so I was so touched that here he was. He came in on his day off on a Sunday to come see me. And to this day, I have such an incredible relationship with him. He's in my book. I'm actually in one of his books. And he didn't give up on me. He knew how much I wanted to keep my leg, but he's not also just responsible for saving my leg. He had a huge impact in my recovery journey, because after he had saved my leg, I'm so scarred up that I hated my leg. I hated that it was scarred. I hated that it gave me so much pain. And it wasn't until I went to see Dr. Wiss and I sat in his office and he put my leg in his lap and he looked at it like a piece of art that I was able to go, wow, if he can look at my leg like it's a piece of art, so can I. And I started to love my leg a little more each day. And I found that if we can start to have that self-acceptance and that self-love, it can grow. And it really was the beginning. That was the beginning of my recovery journey, just kind of accepting where I was and accepting what I could do and where and what I could do. And that was truly the beginning of my recovery journey. And that was when I started to accept my scars and be able to not have to cover them up all the time. And I feel like when you can really accept your, you know, any imperfections you may have, look, people are going to judge you either way. They're either going to love you for it or hate you for it. Either way, you'll be more comfortable in your own skin. And I just want to be comfortable in my own skin. And he's helped me to do that.
Tell us what it was like. You were in the hospital for 3.5 months. Some of the people listening to this podcast are taking care of patients in clinical settings. Some of them are not working clinically and are encountering patients through medical records. Their job is to summarize the medical records and help the attorneys who are handling the cases, such as yours, trying to make sense of what the experience was like. I can imagine that you must have had a phenomenal amount of pain during that initial hospitalization. Was it effectively controlled? Or what can you tell us about that whole experience?
No, it was really hard to control my pain. In fact, after one of my surgeries, they had to go in and do a muscle flap, and they had to take half my calf, and because there was such a big hole in my lower leg, so they had to take half of my calf and do a skin graft and take the skin from the top of my leg and put it down on the bottom of my leg. And my pain was so high that I was going into shock. My vitals were slowly falling, and they thought they were going to have to induce me into a coma again. So my pain has been off the charts. And even when I got out of the hospital, my pain was so bad, but I thought that, well, this is just kind of part of it. This is what it's like. But I have to tell you, I had the most incredible, group of doctors that were on, you know, that were my pain doctors in the hospital. And they were so loving and kind. And I think that when somebody that is looking after you just stops to listen, and it makes such a difference. And because sometimes that's all you really need when you're in so much pain is just for someone to listen, just to feel like you're being heard. Because, you know, in my case, you could see it obviously looked like I had a lot of pain, but there are so many people out there, especially with CRPS, that you can't necessarily see their pain. You can't, you know, but pain demands to be heard. So I was trying to ignore it and stuff it down, and man, it demands to be heard. And it was telling me in every way, you know, you need to pay attention to this. It sends your body into like fight or flight. And it's, you know, through, you know, the support of these amazing nurses that I had, who I still am in touch with a lot of them. We've become friends to this day. And the support of my family, because, you know, there's nothing, I think the only thing worse than my pain is knowing that my pain is causing someone that I love pain. And so it's not, when you're going through a traumatic injury, like I've had, it doesn't just affect you. It affects your whole family, the whole family unit. It has affected my relationship with my husband and my daughters and my friends, but it is up to me and how I react to what has happened and making the best of that situation. So, you know, I've had some incredible nurses, and I have to say I've had some situations where I've had, you know, I'll never forget, I had a lady that came over. She was a nurse, and she was somebody that was reviewing my case. And basically, they had to look at my leg. She had to look at my leg and decide on worst case scenario. We're going to give you what you will need for future care if they amputate your leg versus what you will need for future care if you keep your leg, because they had to add in everything from, you know, what a prosthetic would cost. And this is after I've had all these surgeries and I'm out of the hospital. And she looked at my leg, and at the time I had two compression socks on it because it would swell up so big. And she looked at my leg and she said, the first thing she said is, "Well, are you going to keep it?" And I said, "What do you mean, am I going to keep it? I kept it. What kind of question is that?" Looking back, I can see it looked pretty bad. But I was in like survival mode, and I was just like doing the best I could every single day just to survive the pain and get up. There were days I had a hospital bed when I got home in the middle of my living room. And there were days I thought, how am I going to get through this? And I would just hear my daughter's little voice say, "Mama," and that's all I needed to get me going. But it makes such a difference when you have a caretaker that shows you kindness and doesn't treat you just like, I felt like I was just like a piece of meat. You know, are you going to keep it? Like, it's my leg. Of course I'm going to keep it. I want to keep it. Now, it gave me a little more understanding later on that about a year after my accident, I had gone through, you know, I was doing physical therapy every day. I had gone through these surgeries. I had tried everything for pain, and, you know, Eastern, Western medicine. I had a spinal stimulator. I had ketamine infusions, spinal radial frequency, spinal blocks. I was taking 73 homeopathic pills on top of Eastern medicine. You name it, I had tried it. I'm telling you, if somebody said, "Hey, I've got this snake spit that'll cure your pain," I'd say, "Snake spit? Oh, okay, well, I'll try that." I was in a place of desperation. Finally, when I realized this is the rest of my life and I'm going to have to live in this pain, I went to my pain doctor and I said, "Can you just cut it off?" I said, "I can't take the pain any longer. I need you to amputate my leg." And he said, "We can't do that." I said, "What do you mean you can't do it?" I said, you need to cut it off. I can't live like this." He said, "Well, you've got this nerve disease. CRPS is... you have it. There's no known cure. There are only treatments. If we cut your leg off, you're still going to have CRPS and you're still going to have the pain." And that's when I hit rock bottom. That's when I thought, oh my God, this is the rest of my life. I'm going to have to live like this the rest of my life. And so I was in a really dark place, and it took me, sometimes we really need to, when we think we've hit rock bottom, we hit another bottom. And I think I needed to hit that in order for me to say, oh my gosh, my life was spiraling downward so quick that I thought, I need to do something to get out of this. And that's when I started developing the tools to climb out of those. And also, you know, I had a friend that said, "You obviously have something instilled in you that allows you to thrive, because other people in your situation, they're still in a wheelchair, or they're still taking a million pills a day and living in a dark room, and they've given up on life. What is it in you that that's so instilled in you that allows you to thrive?" And so that's when I came up, I really thought about it, and I came up with an acronym and developed a workbook to help others. And it inspired me to write my second book, because I think one of the questions I get asked most often is, how do I live in pain? How do I work out in pain? How do I still find joy despite pain? How do I walk? How do I walk when I was told I'd be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life? that I would wear orthopedic shoes the rest of my life, that I would never have a normal life. How do I do it? And so that is what has inspired me to share that with others, because no one should have to live like that. No one should have to live in a place of darkness. And we all have that light within us, and we all have that resilience within us. And it's just finding the ways to strengthen our resilience every single day. And it's not easy. And I'm not sitting here saying it is. It's hard. It's hard work. And it is waking up every day and deciding and making that choice that I want to thrive. I want to be resilient. I'm not going to be in that place of victimhood. That's not what I want to show my daughters. I want them to grow up with an example of someone who is not just a survivor. I don't want to be known as just a survivor. I want to be known as someone who, yeah, I had this happen to me. That's part of my story. But it's not what has happened to us. It's what we do with what's left.
So tell us, first of all, from the perspective of the legal nurse consultant, what happened with your lawsuit? Because that's their perspective. They assist attorneys in summarizing records, developing strategies. They know what the insurance companies will and will not do in terms of settlement. What occurred legally with the man who hit you?
You know, I've never spoken to the man who hit me since then. He worked for the Ford dealership. He was on his way to deliver. He was in a hurry to deliver a brand new SUV to someone. When he, you know, gunned it out of the parking lot and hit me. And I wouldn't have even thought about having a lawsuit. Thank goodness my husband is the one who acted on that. And we have a close family friend, very close family friend. We spend every Christmas with them, and they were able to guide us. And he was my lawyer, and he did an amazing job. We had to prove, you know, that I wasn't just, that this wasn't just some side job for me. This was my career. You know, I had done a fitness video the day before my accident. I was a trainer that had three trainers that worked for me. I had, what helped my case was because I was out of work for a year and a half. And what helped my case was I had such, like, very, I'm very anal when it comes to keeping track of all my records. I had every check, check number, the date, who it was from, how many sessions it was for. I had the number of sessions I trained every week, day, or every day, how many sessions of I had trained, for the week, month, and year, and I was able to hand that over. And they had a forensic attorney that went through detail for detail every single day of my life for the past couple of the previous years. And I had 1 week in my calendar that I didn't have record of, and it was a week of Christmas. And they said, "Oh, but you don't have record here." And I was like, "Oh, that was Christmas. You know, I took that week off." But I think that, you know, for my case, because I was a business owner and I was able to show what my income was, I mean, I was the breadwinner of the family. You know, my husband is a cop, and cops have a great, you know, he just recently retired, so he's got a good pension, but, you know, they don't make a ton of money. I was working 6-7 days a week and was the breadwinner. So, I had to prove how much money I lost by not working for a year and a half, how much money, you know, my life would, I can't train 12 clients a day like I used to. This has led me down a different path where now I can impact people, not just on a one-on-one basis like I did before. I'm doing, you know, the speaking, and I'm reaching out to larger audiences. But I couldn't train. So they had to prove in my case that because of my injuries and that I would be in and out of the hospital with surgeries, that I wouldn't be able to return to my career as a trainer like I should. And at first, that was devastating to me. It was heartbreaking because I thought, oh, I will be able to do that. Well, I tried and I wasn't able to do that. And so thank God I had a good attorney who could take some of the emotion out of it, and he could handle the legal part of it for me, because I was a disaster. I was an emotional basket case, and I was in denial of what my future really held. So we settled the case fairly quickly. It was, I think it was less than a year after my accident that my case was settled. It was such a black and white case. They had come at me from every angle trying to say that my motorcycle was faulty, or I was a reckless driver, or I was in camouflage and they couldn't see me. And it was like, you know, when you crash a motorcycle, the speedometer gets stuck on whatever speed you were going. I was going approximately 20 miles an hour. I had on a bright hot pink jacket. They were able to see me. So they, in my case, proved it to be 100% at fault on their side.
Mm-hmm. You talked earlier, before I asked you the question about your lawsuit, about the techniques that you've developed to help you get through the pain, to find joy in living. What can you share with our listeners that has been most effective in helping you through this very difficult recovery into your current state of having some chronic pain?
I think it's all about mindset. For me, I developed a daily gratitude practice where, you know, when I have people say, well, how can you be grateful when you're in pain? Or how are you grateful when you were in the hospital bed? And, you know, there's always something to be grateful for. For me, even when I was in the hospital bed, I was grateful that I had a view in the hospital room, that I had friends that would come to see me. I was grateful that I was still alive. In fact, every day, my daughter and I, when we get in bed, I put her to bed at night and we talk. And we have cuddle time with my little dog. And I think, you know, having that cuddle time is important. And I say, what was the best thing that happened in your day? And I say, what is one thing that you're grateful for? And, you know, sometimes it's often really silly what she's grateful for. But at least it's instilling that in her to be grateful. Because when you're grateful, to me, it's alchemy. It was transformational in my recovery journey. I went from feeling hopeless and depressed and sometimes angry and often really just really sad. And it took all of that, and it changes it to being hopeful, to being empowered, to being motivated to have more in life, to find joy. And so I think too, what has helped me is being of service, because even when I was in the hospital, I needed to have purpose, because when you have purpose, it gives you a reason to keep moving forward every day. And even though I was stuck in that hospital bed, I was still, you know, reaching out to my clients, making sure that they had their exercise routines in place, or that they had another trainer that was working with them. I was even talking to the nurses, giving them exercise tips in the hospital room. And so they invited me back. They wanted me to teach a workout for them when I got well enough to do it. And so I think that, you know, and having a community for me, when I reached out and I admitted that, hey, I am, you know, I put a smile on my face, but this is what's going on. I carry these scars that remind me of, you know, what I have been through and survived and came out of. But I go through hard times and I deal with pain. And once I did that, you know, social media has been an amazing platform, and a source of connection with others that also live with, whether it's, you know, physical pain that you can see or emotional pain that they've been through. And so it's allowed me to connect with others. And I think that by building our community of people and people that can, you know, resonate with your story and they can say, oh my gosh, me too. I go through that. It strengthens your resilience. And so those have been really helpful. And, you know, I think we just have to start where we are and use what we have and do what we can and make the best of every day and commit to being the best version of ourselves every day.
I appreciate you going through this experience. I know that every time you talk about it, it dredges up memory and sensation. And I admire you for being able to do that, to share that message of hope.
Thank you.
Tell our listeners the titles of your books and how they can find out more about you and get copies of your books or anything else that you can offer them.
Okay, yeah. I would love to connect with people. Reach out to me. You can, you know, contact me directly through AmberlyLago.com. You can also get my book, True Grit and Grace, Turning Tragedy into Triumph, there or on Amazon. And look for me on social media because I post an inspirational, a little dose of inspiration every day on Instagram at AmberlyLagoMotivation and Twitter at AmberlyLago and Facebook at AmberlyLagoSpeaker. And if you do, you know, I can't stress enough how important gratitude is and how journaling has been a really helpful tool for me. And so I have created a downloadable gratitude journal. And so I can send you the link for that. You can put it in your show notes if you like, or if you go on my website at AmberlyLago.com, you can sign up and get your free gratitude journal there as well.
I'm particularly struck by the gratitude journal because I'm working with a coach now who recommends that every day you write down what you're grateful for. And I started Monday of this week.
Oh,
and every
really?
Day I've got something different, a list of things that I reflect on and say, yes, these are the things that happened to me today. These are the things that I'm grateful for.
Oh, keeping I love that.
To have a positive focus is so essential in keeping your spirits up.
Yes, it sure is. It just shifts your whole day.
Well, thank you, Amberly, for being on the show. And thank you to our listeners for listening to this interview. Be sure to tell other Legal Nurse consultants about Legal Nurse Podcast. And stay tuned for a new show next week. Thanks so much. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, LNCEU.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lncu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.